Hello, friends. We are back. Highfalutin Steve-On Podcast number 23.
Yeah.
As always, it is your valiant and enthusiastic hosts, Brian and Mario.
How's it going, everyone?
What's going on?
So what do we got for a title this week, Bri?
Oh, this is a fun one. Eat, a pray, love.
I wonder what we're talking about.
What are we talking about?
So, we'll go over some delicious après ski drinks we've come across in the different areas we skied and just kind of talk about what it means to après.
Now, it seems a little bit early, premature. You may think, actually, it's premature and early to start talking about this, but no, good friends. Think about it this way. You have to perfect your concoctions before you bring them to the mountain, before it's go time, before you try to impress your friends. Now is the time where it's like training. It's like
now's the time to shine.
Yes, now's the time you train.
That's
it's
right.
Like spring training for baseball. You got to train in the spring so you can come play in October. Now it's the opposite for this kind of drink. You got to prepare now so when the wintertime comes, you're ready and your recipes are on point and you impress all your friends and you'll have a lovely, wonderful après experience.
Well, you know, summertime, you get a chance to try the drinks, but as you move into the fall, it gets a little cold. It feels like a little drink out. You know, sometimes people have fire pits, things like that. Good time to queue up one of these drinks.
Fire it up. So, yeah, so you guys, please check out our website, skibumpodcast.com, and hit us up on iTunes. Please subscribe, rate us there, do what you got to do. Hit us up on Facebook, /skibumpodcast, or on Twitter, at skibumpodcast.com. You can also send us email at skibumpodcast@gmail.com. What do we got for the weekly flavor there, Mario?
So, this week, we got some mixing going on. I'm doing a nice, delicious beer. I was going to do something different, but decided to stick with the good old-fashioned beer. I'm doing a Yards Thomas Jefferson Tavern Ale. So, just one of our founding fathers that brewed beer.
Yeah, you know, I love that Yards has that Ales of the Revolution.
Yeah.
They have the George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and there's one other one, I think.
The Spruce is which, Ben Franklin?
The Tavern Spruce, yeah. Poor Richard's Tavern Spruce. That's the Ben Franklin one.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're all really good.
It's good. It's like a regular ale, but it's a little on the heavier side. It's not. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
It's substantial.
It's cool because they actually found their original beer recipes, and then they maybe tweaked them or had to, you know, figure out the ingredients based on, you know, if the parchment or whatever they used was destroyed, they had to kind of, figure it out, but yeah, these are actually legit old school recipes from the founding fathers for the beers that they
awesome.
Made. It's so cool, yeah.
So I'm drinking what TJ drank.
See? Exactly.
I call him TJ's, you know.
That's your boy.
And what do you got, Bri?
I have, well, you know, right now I think it's about 97 degrees and humid and disgusting out. And
about the right time for what?
And I am theoretically supposed to be playing outdoor roller hockey in an hour or 2 hours. So I am having an Irish-ish coffee. So it's kind of like an Irish coffee, but just not quite as boozy. So it's an Irish-ish coffee.
Irish-ish.
Yeah.
Beauty with that, you can kind of tweak it however you want, whatever
you
mood you're in.
Yeah. And, you know, hot coffee, hot day.
Now, we were thinking
not
maybe,
the best ideal.
Maybe next time Irish iced coffee.
Irish iced coffee. I mean, really, what is that? How different is that from Frappuccinos and culottes and all that kind of stuff that every chain has?
Yeah.
They're onto something. That'd be good if they're like a whole chain of like just boozy, like almost like a Fat Tuesday.
Yes.
But for coffee drinks. Like just a boozy coffee dessert drink drive-through place.
Drive-through. I was just going to say, got to have a drive-through.
It's got to be drive-through.
And they have the cops waiting right there just to scoop everybody
Yeah,
up.
But how? All right, so how much would you have to drink, you know, if you, say you put like...
You'd be jittery and drunk at the same time. You'd be like tweaking.
That's the best kind of drug. It's like the Red Bull and vodka kind of feeling, you know?
It's called meth.
Like your heart's going to explode, but you're going to fall asleep at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a happy feeling. All right, so we're going to hit up with some ski news this week. And, our good friends at Snowbrains had a pretty cool article this week, the pros and cons of skiing and riding. So skiing and snowboarding are incredible sports, but they do have their pitfalls. Over time, these pitfalls become more and more apparent. It's not unknown for one person to intimately experience both blades of the double-edged sword we call skiing and riding. At some point, one has to sit down and weigh the good versus the bad and measure where one lies. So then they kind of go into like a pro and con of this, and I think some are, you know, some are quotes from people, and you could probably agree or disagree with some of those, but some of the main ones that are, you know, pretty universal, the cons: injuries, death, avalanches.
Those are kind of given cons, right?
Yeah. Big medical bills. How your friends leave you after you're injured.
See you later, man.
Got some shitty friends.
I'm going to go call the guy to come pick you up. That's
yeah,
what they...
right. No matter what, you're going to have fucked up knees when you're old. And this one's probably my favorite one. When talking about skiing and riding, you sound like a douche to anyone who doesn't ski or ride.
Nice.
But, you know, as much as those are cons, the pros: the orgasmic feeling of flying through the air, floating down a mountain as if on a dimensionless cloud of bottomless powder. If you're a ski bum, it's an endless summer camp feeling. Ski travel, skier camaraderie, après ski, scaring the shit out of yourself, getting away unscathed, and loving every minute of it. I mean, I think those are dynamite, and I think obviously if you're listening to this, and you know, we're obviously going to say those pros way outweigh the cons every single day.
If you don't scare the shit out of yourself at least one time when you're skiing, I think you're not skiing hard enough.
Yeah, and it is. It's an amazing feeling to get through that, to get through a run or, you know, drop off of something and to think, okay, this could be the end. This is it. But
it's kind of how you push yourself to get a little better, you know?
And you know what? If you keep just doing blue trails, you're going to get bored. You're not going to get that rush anymore. You got to keep leveling up. It's like with anything in life.
You don't want to push too hard, but you want to push, you know?
You got to keep leveling up. That's what it all comes down to.
Yeah.
You know? See what you're capable of.
I wouldn't say go from the bunny slope to the ski jump, but, you know, maybe just push it up.
Well, if you're like a friend of ours, you could take your friend who his first day skiing and from the top of the mountain after, like, you know, 2 hours on the bunny slope.
Yeah, come on.
Let's see how that works out.
Hadn't skied since.
We're eating burgers in the lodge and we see a, you know, snowmobile come down with someone in the back of it and it's him.
Nice sled.
Yeah.
Hit a sled ride.
We're bored trying to help you. we'll see you at the bottom, maybe.
That was, yeah. That was
allegedly.
So next we have It Just Keeps Snowing in Chile.
Just
will not stop. Oh. And who wants it to? So our day in El Colorado last Thursday was a windless, bright, sunny day with cumulus clouds billowing below. 5 to 10 centimeters had fallen at the end of Wednesday and not really covering the prior day's tracks, but providing an icing to the cake and making the whole mountain skiable. Very, very nice. They've been getting pounded. They've had a lot of... the pictures are great. If you have to go online and start looking at some of these pictures that are coming out of there because it's just fantastic conditions.
Yeah, we'll post links on the website so you can check it out there.
I mean, that's they just kind of rub it into North America. Ha ha, here you go, North America.
Yeah, pretty much.
So
beautiful. I mean, again, it's been nonstop. 1 week it's been, you know, Australia. Next week it's, you know, South America. They're just getting pounded.
And Portillo, more pictures out of Portillo as well.
Yeah, what did they had another big dumping, I think. A significant dumping last couple of days too. So
yeah.
It ain't stopping.
Ain't stopping.
Yeah. All right, now we have a sad story. Ski in Peace, Matt Heffernan. So this was posted on freeskier.com. 23-year-old Matt Heffernan, avid skier and adventurous, passed away Friday, August 14th at Cosse Reservoir, 15 miles northeast of Ogden, Utah. It's reported that he was performing a double backflip off a cliff and landed face first and never surfaced.
Jeez.
And I'm trying to figure out, if it was in the water?
It had to be doing like a cliff diving or something.
I don't know if it was parachuting or if it was into the, like a, I guess into the water, like a reservoir or something. But
yeah, at the Cosse Reservoir. So he was jumping into the water.
Yeah, that's really sad. You know, you hate hearing about that, especially someone so young. So yeah, rest in peace, Matt.
Wow. All right, picking things up again. Things I've learned. Oakley's Greg Stokes on brand growth, session 1242.
Greg Strokes.
Oh, sorry. Greg Strokes.
Stroke me.
And family life. So the international sports marketing manager, Oakley, has been flying the flag since 1997. And Strokes is constantly organizing team trips, attending photo shoots, and just basically supporting all the athletes and at the events that they support. So,
yeah, it's pretty much an interview with him talking, you know, asking about his career and what he does, and it's really cool reading some of these stories. I mean, he's the guy who's at the starting gate, you know, at these different events, and the guy, you know, the weather's been changing and someone needs a specific lens in their goggles or a different pair of goggles, he's the guy who's got to go out there and hustle and get that to the skier or the boarder so they can do their thing. I mean, it's really cool. The guy, you know, he travels all over the world, you know, hella skiing, going to these events, everything.
That's really cool. It, like you could tell from the interview, it's like, you know, he has things that show that he's actually really in touch with everything. Like he appreciates traveling with the athletes, his relationship with them, seeing the sport grow, things like that, which is really neat.
Yeah, he said last year they went down to Australia for an Oakley catalog shoot and just had, you know, an epic time in the mountains. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's really fun to read. And, you know, the guy pretty much has the dream job, you know. So he's just doing his thing, skiing, working for an awesome company like Oakley. And, yeah, just hearing him talk about it is it's inspiring, you know, to make you kind of go out there and try to figure out what it is you want to do and try to put that much passion into your job.
Just killing it.
Really dug that.
All right, so next we have Mountain Collective, add Stowe and Taos.
Yeah, so now you get another two more great mountains.
So, yeah, they have a bunch on there already. They just, for $400, you get 22 days at the best destinations in the world. So we talked about this before. So has Jackson Hole. If I go to Jackson Hole, you know, it might be worth 2 days at Jackson. I don't know. Mammoth, Stowe, Taos, Alta, Sun Valley, Snowbird, Lake Louise, Sunshine Village, Aspen, Snowmass, Squaw Valley, Whistler Blackcomb, and Threadbow.
Yeah, all that for $400.
That's not bad.
It's not a bad deal at all.
You just got to do the traveling. Yeah,
that's the hardest part, is getting around to all those different places.
Well, it's nice about Stowe. It's close to us, so that's 2 days you can get in.
Well, the thing, too, is I think a regular lift ticket at Stowe is about $116 anyway.
Yeah, we went last year, remember? We saw that. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, so, you know, those 2 days there, that's, you know, that's more than half your cost.
Yeah.
It's actually almost, it's almost the... it's like $250
and Jackson Hole, 2 days at Jackson.
Yeah,
if you did that trip this year, you know.
Mm-hmm. You can make that happen. Yeah. That's pretty sweet. So, another two great mountains. If you want to do that Mountain Collective,
gonna have to do the math.
Get on it. And then this is a follow up from last week. Our pal Lindsay Vaughn. You know, we reported that she, you know, broke her ankle in a ski accident. So she actually posted a picture of what the ankle looks like right now, and. Yeah, it's not looking so good. It looks almost like someone dropped a blueberry pie on her leg. I mean, her ankle is just black.
It looks broken.
It's purple, and her foot looks all swollen, little bits of green and yellow in there. It looks almost like if you were watching like Jurassic Park, almost like raptor skin.
Nice.
It has that kind of like texture and darkness and different shades and scales, so... Yeah, I don't know how long she's out of the water for, but...
it's pretty gnarly, but the good thing that I saw about it, it wasn't wrapped, it wasn't in a cast. So I don't know if that means it's on the better side of a break, where it didn't break in the joint, or, you know, different, depending on the kind of break. And
I mean, they showed a picture of her, you know, she's doing, with an air cast, doing planks. So that's obviously a good sign.
That's, yeah.
That it's not that bad.
Hopefully
it's bad,
something small, and she can come back
right
away, so... Wish you the best of luck, Lindsay.
That's right, Lindsay. Get well soon.
Get well soon. We want you to get well. Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
3 o'clock cake time.
All right, so that's pretty much all the ski news we have this week. Again, you know, it's the middle of August. There's not a lot of stuff going on yet, but it's starting to ramp up. You know, we're starting to see a lot of companies sending out their emails for their gear, and we'll probably do a gear... We'll look at some new gear in the next couple weeks. But now we're getting on to our topic.
This is like when you're looking forward to Christmas. This is the lead up to it. This is like almost Thanksgiving.
It's like like you just got your chocolate advent calendar.
Yeah, almost like that.
And, you know, you're not quite at the day where you can start opening up the chocolate to get to it. But you actually got the calendar. So you know it exists. You're getting psyched to get that first piece of chocolate and open that first little door. But you're not quite there yet.
Or it's like starting to think about making your Christmas list. It's like, okay, I need to get new skis. I need to get new gear. I need to get tickets. I need to find a house. I need to, you know, where am I going to do my trips? Like, all this shit is happening right now.
Yeah, now is the time.
And like you said, now's also time we got to start working out a little bit different. Start getting ready for the season.
Stepping it up. Leveling up. And you know what? Last week, I was all like, you know what? Summer's actually pretty cool. fuck that. I'm over it. It's 97 degrees and humid. This is like, you know what it's like? It's almost like those guys who, you know, they think they can like tame a bear. It's like, okay, Mr. Bear, hey, you know, I'm the alpha. You're the bear. Like, you know, and the bear's like, okay, you know what? That's cool. I'll be cool. And then the next day tries the same shit and the bear like bites his head off.
That's right.
It's like, oh. No, you're not.
And then you wind up like a little whiny bitch, like Bear Suit Man.
Like bear, this is what summer is.
Thrown off of that cliff.
Summer is just this big bear trying to like tease you that, oh no, I'm okay. I'm not going to eat your head off. And then he just eats your head off.
No, and then he pulled you right in a sweaty crotch. That's what it feels like right now. It's 97 degrees
sweaty
out.
Sweaty bear crotch.
Bear balls. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Tom Brady deflated balls. That's what it is. Boom. I said it.
It's
I had
always,
to say it.
It's always back to the balls with you. Always back to the balls.
All right, but while we're on that topic, what do we...
Positive, happy things.
Positive, happy things.
Eat, après, love.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
So talking about après ski drinks, and there's a lot to love about après ski drinks.
This is right in our wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah, that's right. this is what the podcast was founded on.
This is the highfalutin ski bum wheelhouse right now.
That was our think tank. It was fueled by après ski.
It really was. And actually, I think it was more a hangover après ski.
Yes, it's pre... during and post. Like, it's all connected with après at the
it's
at
all
the
levels.
All levels.
Levels.
That's right.
Levels, Jerry. All right, so why don't you kick it off with one of your favorites.
One of my favorites that we found this year, the Moscow Mule.
We've had that on the podcast a few times already.
Yeah, I think I got to say right now, this is probably one of my favorite drinks overall, not just for après ski, because in the summer it's refreshing, like we said. Thanks to our buddy Tom from the Telluride trip, we kind of got hooked on it.
T-Bone!
Yeah, yeah. So basically what's in it, ginger beer, or my own favorite concoction, ginger juice and club soda, lime and vodka. Got to put in a copper mug. That's what gives it its little pizzazz.
And if you want one, just go to the bar, order one, and steal the mug. That's always an option, too.
If you're at the Jersey Shore, that's
right. If you're at the Jersey Shore. If you want a fist pump, you can get your free...
That's right.
Yeah, those copper cups are really cool, though.
Oh, they're awesome.
It adds a level of class and sophistication.
Well, what's weird is everybody thinks it's colder, but it's just it's radiating that cold out, so it sweats, and everybody's like, oh, my God, this is such a cold drink. And it's like, it's not really, but it feels like it, so it feels even more refreshing.
That's true.
And then you can do it with, like, tequila if you want, like, a Mexican mule or other liquors. Like, we were at a place that they had every different liqueur, and they just call it something different. So it's a mule, and then you can put whatever... liquor you want in it, kind of. So what do we got next?
Could you do like a Bailey's Mule?
Oh, that'd be nasty.
It's like a cement mixer. A ginger cement mixer is really what that is.
Yes. A ginger cement mixer. I like that. We're gonna have to try that.
So you know what? And you know, that's the beautiful thing about these drinks. You really can take a base recipe, change it up, experiment, and maybe you can create the next great après ski drink.
Yeah.
You know what, like America's Got Talent, you know, the voice. This could be like, you know, like the drink.
The drink.
You know? Or America's Got Bartending Skills.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Well, the good thing is, too, every ski area, and, you know, we should have prefaced this by saying, every ski area is going to have a version of this, probably. And the best part is they all twist it just a little bit, you know, different at the bar, different at the ski resort. Like, so it's kind of nice to try things and go and see what's on the menu.
Yeah, it's awesome when there's like a local drink, you know, that an area is known for or a particular bar is known for. You can really come up with some. That's where we find a lot of this cool stuff. Just going there and experimenting and trying new stuff.
A lot of trying.
And then one of my personal favorites, this is a Punsch, a.k.a. Glühwein, which is made in, you know, Switzerland, Austria, Germany. And this is something I grew up with. My parents are from Germany, and my mom used to make it at Christmas every year. And it's my freaking...
No eggnog. It was this.
It was this. And my sister allegedly can't drink it because when she was like 11, she apparently drank it.
Whoa.
Drank like a glass of it and like passed out, I guess, or was sick. I don't know if my dad gave it to her or if she kind of just stole it. It's like, wow, it's purple.
Purple, let's drink it.
Purple. Yeah. So what it is, it's you know, it's a Christmas drink. It's a mulled wine. It's similar to Scandinavian glögg. It's red wine. I mean, the recipe that I've made, it's red wine, white wine, rum, brandy, sugar, black tea, lemons, and oranges. A little bit of sugar, a little bit of cinnamon sticks, and maybe a couple of cloves. But, you know, it varies a little bit. You know, it's one of those things, like different neighborhoods, different communities will have their own kind of separate version of it.
If you're on the South Side, you do it a little bit different. Yeah. North Side, a little bit different.
Yeah, you can you kind of tweak it, modify it to your taste. But
that's what's good about it, though.
And you cook it on the stove, but you don't let it boil, obviously. You don't want to take out the alcohol, but you keep it warm. And it's one of those things, like, once you're done skiing, and you know, if you go skiing in the Alps, they have this everywhere. Now, one thing, we were in Ischgl this year. We tried the Glühwein at probably, what, 5-6 places at least. A lot of them were just too sweet.
So this we found with a few drinks. We'll talk about the other one. But they're sweet when you go out, and this is why it's really good. When you make it at home, it feels, you know what you're putting in it. It's natural ingredients. It's different, and it's tailored to your taste.
You have more control over your ingredients, yeah.
And it's that's why you got to play around with it, because this, you know, this, you can't just whip up a quick drink of this. You got to spend, you know, a little substantial amount of time. So that's why you try it out in the summer and the fall. You spend, you know, 3 hours making it and see how the batch comes out.
Yeah. You think Thomas Jefferson, who made his beer, his first batch was perfect? No.
Yes, actually. No.
He drank a little bit. He wrote that Declaration of Independence. Made a little more, drank some more.
That's right.
And now he finally got it down.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's one of those things, like, yeah. And, you know, when you go there, they have, like, those dispensing machines, almost like we have coffee machines, where it's either some sort of powder or liquid that they, you know, put in there, and then it dispenses it. I think it's almost like a coffee machine that has that, you know, like those liquid bags they have in the coffee machines, and it mixes, yeah, with the water. And
I think a lot of it's pre-made.
A lot of it is pre-made. You can tell. It just,
well, you could buy mulled wine. You know, there's certain brands that make it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think some of the big, you know, big scares, they're obviously not going to make it by hand, generally. You
it's going to cost too much. It's too labor-intensive. But, yeah, if you can go online and find these ingredients or these recipes, it is delicious. It is so good. And you know what? If anyone calls it a girl drink, you know what you do? You punch them in the face and you drink it and go, this is goddamn delicious. I'm not even talking to you. You're an asshole anyway.
Actually, the best part of this, it's like, the feeling of drinking it after a good day of skiing is like, it's like you're awakened. It's like you're refreshed, revived, like Christmas. You're warmed up. Oh, it's fucking great.
It just like invigorates like all of your senses.
It like makes you flush again and brings everything to life. It's great.
It's a thing of beauty. It's delicious.
Mm. All right. So the next one we got here, we have Jaeger tea. And we have recipe links for general recipes for all this. But like we just said, everybody's got their own recipe and an experiment. The Jaeger tea, I actually started with the recipe from like the Swiss consulate homepage or something like that. It's like their...
Oh, you had that last year. Yeah, that recipe. I remember you passed that along. That was really good.
I actually printed the label with the recipe on it, and I was given... That's what I gave out as a gift. But I tweaked it from that, and I actually made my own recipe. And, you know, it's a popular Austrian drink, Apres-Ski. There's a brand called Stroh that makes it, and it's out in the stores. So you could try it, but that's on the sweeter side.
I've actually bought it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know what? Just having it as like an after dinner, like a little shot,
yeah,
it's actually really tasty.
And did you warm it or not?
I didn't. But you can also, yeah, you mix it with water, with warm water, and you can make it like a real Jaeger tea.
Nice.
And I haven't tried that, but we went through the whole bottle, my dad and I, and he really liked it.
Wow. So well, the punch in the Jaeger tea is cool because like you serve it even out of the fridge and just put it in the microwave for like 40 seconds, 50 seconds, heat it, you know, a few times if you want to get it up to a certain temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Don't boil it. And then you drink it, and it's fantastic. It's like,
yeah,
fresh.
And you make a good point. You said that you gave them away as gifts last year. That is an awesome gift, too. Because
who's going to make it?
Just think about it. Well, yeah. Plus, too, like, what are you going to buy for adults? You know, right. Like, what don't adults already have? You know, like, you can afford, if you can afford to go skiing, you can afford, you know, an iPod or, you know, any sort of crap. So whatever you're going to buy somebody is going to be junk they're probably going to throw away. Yeah. This is on my mind because my wife and I just threw out, like, 9 bags of crap. Well, not threw it out, but brought it to, like, Goodwill.
Yeah.
Just getting rid of stuff. You know, like, and a lot of it was like just gifts we got from people that, like, it's like, what am I going to do with this?
Yeah.
You know? So to give someone, to make this, to cultivate, to craft this drink, and then to give it away as a gift, that is so cool.
And knowing what goes into it, you know they spent an hour, 2 hours making a batch of it, and they thought about making enough for you, putting it in a bottle, and giving it to you.
It's special. It's fantastic. Yeah, it's an awesome gift, and it's so delicious. And it's, someone could probably look and be like, oh, this is gay, this is dumb. You know what? Number one, again, that person's an asshole. And number two, as soon as they try it, they're like, wow, this is really good.
I gotta say, this is all alcohol too. Both of these drinks.
There is, you know, you just squeeze three oranges and two limes and
you're not watering this down. It is all like substantial
jet fuel.
So Jaeger tea, it's basically red wine. You put tea in it, and now this is where I changed the recipe and I played around with chamomile tea. You could put black tea. Chamomile actually works the best. I like that. It's mild. Spiced rum, plum brandy, or schnapps, so you could play around with different flavors. I've done apple schnapps. Apple schnapps, plum brandy.
The plum brandy, like the swivel, was it Slivovitz?
Slivovitz, I think,
That's actually really good in there.
Yeah. Orange juice, which I played around with the orange juice, depending on which, like, Tropicana you want. I usually don't like the pulpy one, so I'll actually take it and sometimes strain it, even if it's no pulp. Anyway.
That's gangster.
You can get crazy. Cloves, cinnamon, lemon, and I think I put orange peel in it as well. So, like, you could play around with, you know, just add flavors that you like. And you just, I think there's a temperature. I think it's, like, you can't bring it over 130 degrees. Otherwise, you're going to start boiling off the alcohol.
130, that's it?
I think it's 130. I saw something, and they said simmer it at that. Try to not, you know, I think you could go up to 150 or something. Mm-hmm. I got to look online. Maybe we'll add that to the posting when we put it. But, definitely, you don't want to boil it, and it's even before it boils, you don't want to get it that high because you'll boil off some of the alcohol. What you really want to do is keep that alcohol in, so you have one little teacup of it, and you're just like, wow, that's like two drinks.
Yeah, they're no joke, and especially because they're warm, you don't feel it as much. They will knock you on your ass if you have too many of them. But they are so. I mean, again, for after skiing, it is the perfect drink.
I brought that up to the ski house last year, and everybody's like. Whoa, this is awesome.
And we blew through that bottle, too.
Yeah, that was like a, this is an orange juice bottle, right? It was a big bottle.
Those little Tropicana, was it the big Tropicana
the
bottle?
Big Tropicana the, bottle.
Yeah, we blew through that.
Yeah, but of course, I have like a 5-gallon thing that I make on the stove, and you know, you just make a giant. Now you start cooking, and it's not like you're making a few little servings. You're making as much as you can, because you're going to spend 3 hours making it.
What about getting a tanker truck, filling that with Jaeger tea or Glühwein and going to the mountain and having a friggin' parking lot après-ski party? It'd be like the Silver Bullet commercials, but with actually something drinkable.
And have
not Coors Light.
And we could have a smoker attached to that with a roast pig.
Have it on top. Have the roast pig on top of the tanker truck.
Dripping right in.
Just have it rotating on the top, showing that we are the top of the food chain.
We are the top.
There's a rotating meat.
Yeah, and then when the bears come to eat.
They're all hibernating, son.
That's right, they're hibernating.
Hibernese.
Wolves?
No. Hibernese.
Hibernese.
There's no ticks. There's no poison ivy. No sharks. Winter is the best.
There was shark-a-lynch. That could happen.
Shark-a-lynch. Well, obviously, that's always a possibility. Can't rule that out.
But yeah, those are two. I tell you, the punch, which you make an excellent punch, and then I wanted to try to be like, I got to contribute somehow to have my own Puerto Rican Austrian Jaeger tea. Boom, that's what I bring to the table.
Puerto Rican Austrian Jaeger tea.
And it didn't come out too bad.
Actually, it was dynamite. It was really good. Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, you know, little mutt Americans here, the ones that we made were better than the ones we had in Austria.
Yeah.
And that's like the cradle. That's where it's all from.
And what I love, you had the home cooking. You had the Bavarian from Bavaria, the recipe.
Oh, yeah. My mom, she's a gangster. And the best thing, like when she makes it, she doesn't measure anything. She's just like, bloop, 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 just dumping stuff in, tasting. She's like, perfect. And I tried, I'm like tasting every 2 seconds and trying everything and measuring. And
I'm measuring everything out.
And Andrea, like every year, I'm like, is it as good as mom's? She's like, no, not as good as mom's. I'm like, oh. So every year I try.
Just got to keep doing it.
I think this year, for Ski Bum Week, we got to bring just vats of this stuff.
We're going to make it up there.
We can make it up there.
Yeah, I'll bring my big pot. Maybe get a bigger one.
We should get a lobster pot.
Yes.
Make it in there.
Oh, that'd be great.
Right?
You know what we should
do?
And
then we'll drink, like, we'll start, like, taste testing and then do a podcast.
Mogul Challenge. We should bring it out there and make it. Just, like, have, the portable, gas sterno thing and make it on that.
What about a Camelback full of it while skiing?
Oh, you get the hot packs and you put it in the Camelback?
Oh, those hand warmers. Put the hand warmers in there.
Just a ton
of
them.
Warm.
Just keep it warm. Just like 20 of them. Just put them in there.
Just like sipping it. Oh.
That would be good.
I think we should do that one day.
I think I'd do one run and just pass
it. Just like flop over.
Yeah.
Like slide down the hill face first.
But.
All right. So what? Yes. Jaeger tea, Glühwein. So we're going to post it on the website. You can take a look and there's links to the recipes. And you know what? If you try your own version, hit us up, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you did, what you tweaked, if you liked it, send us pictures, and we'll talk about you on the next podcast then.
Could have a whole recipe swap for those, just those two drinks.
Yeah, we'll have a little recipe swap, a recipe club, you know?
So maybe somebody makes a white wine punch? Who knows?
Let's see. What do you got? Send us if you have any cool drinks, please send them our way, and we'll be happy to talk about them too.
Cool.
So the next one is kind of a weird one, and we discovered this over the last couple of years going to Killington. It's called the Goombay Smash, which, now, I'm going to tell you the ingredients. It's actually a rum-based beverage in the Bahamas, but for some reason, it's become like a thing up there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a well-known drink up there.
They have this a lot of other places, non-skiing, but like, it's like a Killington thing.
Yeah, it's like a big thing there. And what a Goombay Smash is... Goombay Smash consists of is 1 ounce of spiced rum, 1 ounce of coconut rum, 1/4 ounce of apricot brandy, 2 ounces of pineapple juice, and 2 ounces of orange juice. And you pretty much just shake it, ice, a little cherry on top, and go to town. And I mean, it's boozy. Actually, it doesn't taste boozy at all. That's
no,
the problem.
It doesn't.
With
it. Sneaks up on you.
It's almost like Mai Tai-ish, maybe?
You could drink one in like 2 sips and be like, "Oh, there's nothing in it. It's like juice."
Yeah,
and then it hits you.
Yeah, they are dangerous, but they are so good,
delicious.
And as my father-in-law said, he goes, "Goombay smashes are like women's breasts." He's like, "One is not enough, and 3 is too many." So just keep that in mind if you're going up there and you're grabbing some Goombay smashes.
Wise advice.
Yeah, and you know, one of the places up there, Lookout, that we would, you know, we've had them at. That place, I guess there's lookouts. I mean, you look at the map or the menu, it tells you the locations on there. They're really like the most awesome spots. Like all the big ski towns, like all over the country, they're located in.
It's great.
Which is that's spreading a great business plan.
They're spreading that Goombay Smash everywhere.
Spreading the Goombay Smash love.
Cool. And that, you know, it highlights too, like, you know, what is the drink of the area? So it's nice to know that. So that's kind of neat when you go to an area, you drink like what they're known for, kind of. So. And then next we have, as Brian likes to drink often, Irish coffee. And the way he likes to do it, Brian?
I like it with Bailey's and with Jameson.
Why not have both?
Why can't we have both?
Right? See, some people do it with Bailey's. Some people do it with whiskey. There's, you know, different variations. You can do whatever you want. But I got to say, I tried one the way you had it, and it was very good.
Oh, it's so good. And no whipped cream. Come on, we're grown-ups
here.
No,
I don't do the whipped cream.
Yeah, I probably like a 1-2 ratio Bailey's to whiskey. So one, I guess, I don't know if it'd be a whole shot. It probably would be a whole shot. Like a half a shot of Bailey's.
Yeah.
And a whole shot of Jameson. It just gives it that little bit of sweetness from the Bailey's and just that deliciousness of the Jameson.
One shot and 2 shots and a splash of coffee.
And a splash of coffee.
Just to warm
obviously,
it up.
Obviously, yeah.
But yeah, that's really good because you had a little coffee in there.
That's a
up.
Conor McGregor right there.
Conor McGregor. Clan McLeod. Next, I tell you what, I drink this, a whole bottle of Baron Jaeger with this. So, hot toddy, this is the way I've made hot toddies before when I was married and whatever, but chamomile tea and cognac. But what you can do is, instead of the cognac, do honey liqueur like Baron Jaeger. And if you haven't had Baron Jaeger, go out, buy a bottle, buy the regular one, because they have like a few different flavors now, but it's a honey liqueur, and we actually kept the bottle out on the deck, so it was like it actually got like thick like honey because it was so cold out, and we were putting in the tea. And I tell you what, when you're sick, this is great to have. You'll have, you know, have one of these or two of these, and you just fall right asleep. It's better than NyQuil, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's really good. It helps you sleep, and the chamomile's nice for you.
Yeah, it's got like herbs.
Herbs.
You know, it's got health benefits, I'm sure.
It's healthy. Somewhere. And the Baron Jaeger has honey, right? So he's kind of honey and, you know, it's a tea with honey.
Yeah. One other one, too. Now, this one I remember having the first time ever was in Lake Tahoe. It's called a peppermint patty. So it's hot chocolate with peppermint schnapps, which, I mean, it goes down really smooth.
We had those in Tahoe also, the umbrella bar.
That's what I just said, Tahoe.
Oh, I thought you said somewhere else.
No, Lake Tahoe. Yeah, that's what we had there. It was just, again, it's one of those things too. Like, that's the cool thing about, you know, having a unique drink at a you know, a new place, is that you will always tie the memory of that first one to that day, to that location, that experience.
That was a nice day too.
Oh, it was glorious. I mean, beautiful bluebird day, tons of fresh snow. It was fantastic. And to have a great drink to kind of like seal in the memory, you know?
Yeah.
Locks it in.
And where you had it? Like, we had a nice place.
At Umbrella Bar. Oh, so cool. Yeah.
And Tahoe's so sunny. It's nice and sunny.
It's beautiful. And it actually, when it has snow, it was glorious, which hopefully we'll have this year.
So glorious.
And one other one that, you know, apparently is becoming a big thing is the Fireball. Everybody loves that Fireball whiskey. I don't know. Seems a little amateur hour to me. Just throwing that out there. If you're going to have whiskey, be a grown-up. Drink real whiskey. No cinnamon nonsense. Maybe a cube or two. But the Fireball, yeah, it's for the kids. They like it. God bless them. Godspeed. But
if you want to puke, that's a good... That's the express way to go.
It's not a highfalutin way to go.
So I have a buddy at work. Went down to the shore this weekend. And he actually has Lyme disease. So he's recovering from Lyme's, which is good. He's going to recover.
Did the Fireball cure it?
Actually, so he was sober the whole weekend. They had police checks all over. So he was the guy doing the beer runs, which is good and safe. So he goes out there like, so that, you know, of course, his wife and like all their friends and all, go out and get us some Fireball too. He's like, you sure you want that? So he never drank Fireball before, but he's like, I'm not going to drink it. It looks like the devil and like a fiery ball on the thing. He's like, yeah, I don't want any part of that. He said they drank almost there was like eight of them, and he didn't drink any. They drank it down to like there was maybe like a shot left.
Oof.
Out of a fifth, plus all the beer and stuff that they were doing with it. So he said the next day they were all walking dead.
Yeah, I had one New Year's Eve where I had a couple of them, and I think I pretty much refer to it as Satan piss right now.
Yeah,
it's not a pleasant hangover. It's probably the worst kind of hangover with that stuff. It's terrible.
I'd imagine the only thing worse is probably a PBR hangover.
Ugh. You have like 37 of those to have a hangover from that. And it's funny too, like it's a big thing apparently. Obviously, everyone loves the Fireball. And a lot of other companies are doing the cinnamon, like a lot of whiskey companies, Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, a few others are making cinnamon whiskeys as well. But one thing I did notice, like, you know, when I go up to my my in-laws up in Connecticut and I go for a jog, I always find like little empty shooters on the side of the road.
The airplane bottles?
Yeah. And like the, you know, like the little like the hobo size, like the hip flask one, like that size. Every time, I guarantee you, I encounter maybe four or five crushed bottles of Fireball on the side of the road.
Kids probably
like
go out.
Kids are going
in
the middle of nowhere because they live in the middle of nowhere. Just have a couple drinks, throw out the window, get rid of the evidence, and go home and get their Connecticut on.
Yeah.
So lots of options, and you know, then there's always the Bloody Mary. Which is a favorite, you know, that's pretty universal. I don't know, do they have those in Europe at all? Or is that more of like an American thing?
I don't think anybody got it in Europe.
I think it's an American thing.
I got to tell you, though, there are a lot of variations. And one of the things about the Bloody Mary is now, recently, there's been a big push in the different garnishings of it.
Ah.
So remember we were in Telluride and Ryan ordered that Bloody Mary. It was like a... $20 Bloody Mary.
Wasn't it like a jumbo shrimp in there, too?
Like jumbo shrimp, bacon. It was like a salad
bacon
on there. It was like a salad on top of that Bloody Mary.
It was like a Red Lobster dish.
Yeah.
Like on top of the Bloody Mary.
It was hilarious. But, I mean, if you look at what's in a Bloody Mary...
Cheddar Bay biscuit?
It's actually pretty good for you. Like, it's got the... you know, tomato juice, and it's got horseradish. It's got a lot of decent stuff in there. Me personally, and I think I speak for Brian, we've tried Bloody Marys. We've gone to Bloody Mary tastings, tried a bunch of different ones. I'm just not a Bloody Mary guy.
I keep trying. Every couple, maybe like once a year, I'll taste it, and I'll be like, this is still disgusting.
Yeah. So the basic ingredients, you're talking vodka primarily, tomato juice, lemon, Worcestershire sauce, Tabasco, salt, pepper, celery salt, and horseradish. And then people add other things in there, garnish with, you know, pickled green beans, green onions, lemon, lime, celery. Celery is the one that everybody commonly sees. Oh, wow, that's a Bloody Mary because you see the big celery stalk sticking out. But there's also like bacon, shrimp.
Shrimp treat.
I'm sure there's like, you know, meat on there, like anything.
A sausage link, and kale, perhaps.
You basically put anything. So, and some of these places are kind of cool. Like, it's almost like a, you're getting a little bit of an appetizer with your drink. And it's kind of...
It's a meal in a glass, really.
It is.
I guess it's big for hangovers. That's like the big thing when you drink them.
Yeah.
you got to think the person who first came up with this recipe had to be drunk, because there's no way you're mixing tomato juice and Worcestershire and vodka together if you're sober. It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Awesome.
But if you like them, Godspeed. Keep drinking them. Have a good time. Let us know. Hit us up. SkiVanPodcast.com.
And the other big thing to drink for?
Beer, perhaps?
I think it's beer.
I think it is beer.
And what kind do we like? I like IPAs. Where you are. No. I like.
It depends where you are. That's, yes. Again, that's
and
the
And this
big
is
thing.
Where you go to location. Location, location, location.
Mm-hmm.
So Austria, what were you drinking?
Stiegel.
Stiegel. We also
and the Franziskaner, the Weiss beer.
Franziskaner. Mm-hmm. We had Augustiner.
Augustiner, yeah.
German. But yeah, that's kind of nice to drink the local stuff. And it's funny when you go, like, especially whenever I've gone away, they usually have one or two different beers and that's it. It's not mm-hmm. like here where you have like, oh, you got 40 beers on tap. They would never have that. They have like two or three beers and that's it.
The local ones, yeah. It's like decision paralysis we have here.
It's like you want a Weiss beer or you want
lager.
A lager.
That was it.
A Pils.
A Pils, know? That's right, Pilsner. Yeah.
You know, and that's it. That's what you get. And then if you're at a cool place, like we go to Killington a lot, what are we drinking?
Long Trail, baby.
That's right.
Preferably the Limbo IPA or the Sick Day IPA. Yeah. Ugh.
And usually you look for the brewery that's in the town. So we're in Telluride, absolutely. Telluride Brewing Company. You're in, you know, all these different places, you're drinking what's around.
And plus, too, like, you know, where most ski mountains are located, there's usually a pretty good craft beer scene in those towns or in that general area. I mean, Colorado, that's, you know, one of the best places for craft beer. So you're going to get Oscar Blues. You're going to get, like I said, Telluride Beer Company. There's a, was it Belgian? What's it, Fat Tire? Is it Belgian?
That's a Belgian.
No, yeah, but what's the name of the company that brews it?
Hmm.
Oh, I can't remember.
Do not know.
I am so mad at myself right now. Fat Tire. I know it. I know what it is.
But even like little places, like we've been at like Camelback, and on the way back from Camelback.
Yeah, New Belgium. So I knew something Belgian-ish. New Belgium. The New Belgium brewing company.
But even on the way back from like a small place like Camelback, they have a brewery right there. So it's kind of like
everywhere
you go. Like, and that's the big fad right now, breweries. Little brewing companies, local brews. It's nice.
You go to Stowe, you allegedly get Heady Topper.
Actually, we did get in the bar.
We did.
So we did. We went to Stowe and we did get Heady Topper. So
yes,
our mission was success.
You get it there.
Mission was accomplished.
I mean, that's the cool thing is wherever you go, there's pretty much guaranteed to be a decent craft beer scene. Yeah, Vermont, there's just tons of great beers there. Yeah. Colorado, Oregon, if you ski Mount Hood up there, tons of great beers, Rogue and all them. Washington, you got tons of good beers up there too, up at Stevens. So try the local stuff, you know, give something different a try. You might run into a new favorite.
Definitely support that local economy. It's nice.
Definitely.
Between the restaurants, they usually have pretty good restaurants too. So like, you know, on a whole week, I'll go out for like one really nice dinner and just drink the local beers too. And
so go there, pull up your goddamn pants and don't order a PBR. That's all we're just trying to say. That's our advice. Live a little. Be a grown up.
Live a little.
Don't be grown up. But be a grown-up.
Got to be highfalutin.
Got to keep it highfalutin. SkiBombPodcast.com. You know. All right. What time is it?
It's time for Around the Horn, baby.
Yes, it certainly is. Again, we have some wonderful news stories for y'all this week. What do we got, Mario?
So, let's start off with Lord of the Rings star. The guy that played Samwise Ganji was also in Goonies. Played Rudy. So Sean Astin he's going to compete in the 2015 Ironman World Championships, which is a huge accomplishment, man. So it requires swimming, biking, and running over exactly 140 miles and 0.6 tenths.
So what's the breakdown then? Like how far? You have to swim like, is it a mile and a half or is it 2 miles?
I think it's 100. It's a century plus, and then
it's 26 mile bike ride, or marathon. Run. Yeah, right. Marathon is 26.4.
I think the bike is 100, maybe a little bit more, and then there's the swimming. So whatever's left over from that, I don't know what the breakdown is. You might bike a little more than that, but it's pretty substantial. It's in Kilauea Kona, Hawaii. He's 44. He has 10 marathons under his belt, and he completed a half marathon in July in 7 hours and 25 minutes, which is pretty good by half Ironman standards.
That's awesome. It's good for him.
Yeah, good for him. He's saying he's training like 10 plus hours a day. His family's behind him because it's just such a commitment. And I was actually, I did a bike ride this weekend, 65 miles, actually wound up being 67. And my friend that does triathlons, he's only done a half try only, you know. But it was funny because he hurt his knee recently and he's like on the mend. He did his, you know, we did the 67 mile bike ride together. And he was talking to one of the other guys he knows. He's like, well, you're going to train for the full triathlon. He's like, you know, he's like, I train 10 to 12 hours a week. He's like, that's just to do a half. He's like, to do a full, now you're talking about like stepping that up at least, you know, another 5 or 10 hours a week. I mean, that's a huge commitment.
That really is. I mean, you know, being, you know, Samwise Ganji, I think he has the bankroll where he doesn't have to, you know, go to a 9-to-5-er.
Yeah, which
he can dedicate that to. It's just a funny thing. Like, you think of his character in that movie, you know, fat little doughy Sam, and now he's going to be, like, you know, shredded doing an Iron Man.
It's crazy.
It is.
And I think they take, like, what, 20 hours to do?
I don't even know. I don't think it's that long. I don't think it's quite that long.
Let's see. What's the...
It's got to be... I know when we were on our honeymoon out in Hawaii, it was the same time when they do the one out in Kona. They had people... We talked to some people who were... That's why they were out in Hawaii was, you know, if they were traveling from Europe to go to Hawaii specifically for this Ironman race.
Wow.
Which is... it's a lot of dedication and a lot of training.
All right, so you swim 2.4 miles, bike 112 miles, and run 26.2.
Wow.
And then you get to brag like there's no end in sight.
Yeah. That is no joke.
They actually do the Iron Man tattoos right when you finish, too, if you want one.
Oh, really?
Like, it's like, that's, you know, it's the Iron Man symbol.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, like, you know, they try to make sure that, you know, people really don't give it to you. You know, other tattoo artists don't just give you one of those. You really have to do the Iron Man. It's pretty badass to have one.
I wonder if can you get, like, a tramp stamp of the Iron Man logo? Yeah,
get it wherever the hell you want, man. Get right on your forehead.
Yeah, right?
Pretty baller to show.
Oof. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I think for me, the scariest thing about that is that 2.4 mile swim.
So it's funny. If you talk to people that do triathlons or anything, they're like, it's not just you're going out and swimming. You're swimming in a crowd of people. So it's like you're just getting hit, bumped, kicked, held under. Like my one friend said one time he actually, you know, kind of slipped under somebody and he was getting held under. And he was like, he started freaking out a little
bit. And nobody gives a shit about you. Everyone's out for themselves, yeah.
Well, they canceled. They had the New York triathlon the first year. It was first or second year, and then they canceled it for 1 year because somebody died in the water. They got they drowned in the water. I don't know if they had a heart attack or they drowned or whatever, but it was crazy.
Yikes.
I think they have it back now, though. I was looking up, so along with this story, I was looking up, SI put out a story about Brazil, and I guess Brazil ran a triathlon, an Ironman kind of to start prepping for like for the Olympics coming there. And they were talking about the quality of the water is just still pretty filthy and horrible.
Oof.
They said they needed to clean it up, you know, to get it. They needed to clean it up about 80% of what it is now. They said they're probably going to only get it to about 60%.
Well, didn't the U.S. rowing team, like a bunch of guys just get sick down there training?
Yeah. Well,
I'm not sure if it was in the Amazon or somewhere else in Brazil.
I don't know. I know
the whole team got sick.
I know the sailing people were talking about boycotting it because they have like furniture floating in the water. It's like it's so. I saw something on it recently. And they said actually it was that article in SI, and they were talking how they just don't have the facilities because they haven't built that infrastructure of, you know, sewers and stuff like that.
Oof.
So. They haven't built it, and they say one of the things, it's political. Like, if you can't put your name on it, if it's not above ground, you can't put your name on it, so nobody really cares about it. So it's kind of like, it's not that they had the money over the years, they just put it somewhere else.
Just cultural, I guess, the way they, want to support things.
So they actually said they're doing a good job trying to catch up on where they should be and cleaning everything up because the IOC and a whole lot of people got on top of them about, look, don't mess this up. This is, if you want to be a big city, roll with the big dogs, you got to step up. So
yeah, this article says that 4 coaches and 11 members of the U.S. rowing squad fell ill after taking part in a pre-Olympics test event in Brazil's Rio de Janeiro amid ongoing concerns over water quality ahead of next year's games.
It's bad.
Oof, that is gross.
So now, if you're doing an Ironman in Hawaii, hopefully that's cleaner water.
Oh yeah,
you know it is.
Well, yeah, until Fukushima.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Toxic waste.
You never know, right?
Rolls in there, yeah. But now, going from bad things in the water to going to wonderful things in the water, this is a story about Azam, the world's largest super yacht. So the company Luzin launched a 590-foot Azam, which is now the world's largest super yacht. 590 feet long.
That's crazy, man.
It looks like a cruise ship.
Dude, I'm telling you, the first cruise ship I ever went on was a small cruise ship and went to Bermuda, and I think it was smaller than that.
Yeah, this thing is absolutely crazy. It's got looks like it's got at least five decks, you know, the helipad, you know, everything else that
I wonder how much square footage is in there. Because that's just five. It's 500 and what is it, 60 feet?
590.
Long. 590 long.
Yeah.
So that's just the length of it, and then it's pretty damn
again,
wide.
Six. It's got six decks.
It looks like a cruise ship.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
And yeah. One person owns it. They actually built it. It's funny. The pictures they have are like secret pictures, like taken because they always try to do like they have to do the seaworthy trials and get it certified and all that. They actually said it moves that big ass boat moves about 35 miles an hour or so, 30 knots, which is approximately 35 or so plus.
Yeah.
That's pretty fast for a big boat like that.
It's gorgeous, too. I mean,
better be for. They didn't say how much it was, right?
I don't think they listed the price, but that's got to be $100 million? I don't know.
So I have that World Yachting Magazine. Remember we're looking at it?
Yeah.
And there's like $23 million for a boat, 2-year waiting list. $9 million for, like, it's all over the map.
Apparently people are buying these things and, you know, buying them in droves and getting on these waiting lists for them. So, you know, obviously people are doing really well for themselves. So, hey, if you want to host us for a podcast, we'll be happy to, you know, hop on your yacht for you.
We'd love that.
Yeah, skibonepodcast.com. Hit us up.
Boom. Boom. All right. So the next one, kind of a follow-up to last week. Brian, I'll take this away.
So, yeah, we talked about that delicious Soylent beverage last week that is, you know, full of nutrients. And it's supposed to, you know, provide you with a low-cost way to get all the vitamins and nutrients you need in a day. But apparently...
It's like a Similac for adults, right?
I guess sort of, yeah. I guess they're being sued by a watchdog group for potential health dangers. So despite being concocted from an amalgamation of chemical this and that, Soylent has long stood by its claim that the stuff is completely harmless, but now a watchdog group is saying otherwise, that it doesn't abide by California's Safe Drinking Water and Toxic Enforcement Act. Last Thursday, the nonprofit As You Sow filed a notice of intent to go after the company, quote, for failure to provide sufficient warning to consumers of lead and cadmium levels in the Soylent 1.5 product, end quote. So I don't know what cadmium does to you if you get too much of it, but I don't think you really want it because when you type in cadmium into Google, the first thing that comes up is poisoning. So,
yeah, it's not good stuff.
No, I don't think you really want that. It's very, I guess it's a bluish white metal found in zinc ore. So I guess you don't want that. It's a bad thing.
If you ordered
your Soylent. Well, I think also the product we were talking about was Soylent 2.0. This is 1.5. So it looks like maybe they've changed their formula, but
they beat them to the punch.
It's like New Coke going back to Coca-Cola Classic.
That's right.
But this is going forward instead of back.
They said, we know you're on to us with 1.5. We already came out with 2.0.
They topsy-turvy ipso facto it, and now they're on the 2.0. Now with less cadmium.
Now with less cadmium.
It's exactly what you want to see on something you're going to eat.
That's awesome.
All right. Another one. This one's from our pals at Vice. I like this story. This is pretty funny. Scientifically, does gaydar actually exist?
Scientifically.
The word gaydar has been in use at least since the 1990s and has avoided a fake medical acronym along the lines of ASMR and HSP. No one is pretending to speak with medical authority when they say, that guy pinged my gaydar. But while it might sound almost dismissive to imply that we have devices in our brain that detect some kind of waves of gayness emanating from other people, gaydar is a well-studied phenomenon. Unfortunately, the results of all that study just seem to push a unified theory of gay detection further and further away. So it seems like gaydar is not actually a real thing.
And this neurologist wrote a book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they said in one, yeah, there's a book called, where is it? A Gay, Straight, and the Reason Why. And they define gaydar as the ability to spot people who are gay without the benefit of any explicit information about their sexual orientation. So does that mean you would never even hear the person talk, or, you know, you...
I have no idea.
That's
dude.
Weird. That's yeah. Weird.
This is very, very weird.
Yeah.
All right, moving into sports.
Moving into sports
Jeff now.
Time with sports.
Adidas now wins the NHL jersey rights.
There
so
you go.
We're going to see a little tweet coming in. The NHL jersey's coming.
Good, because Reebok, I mean, they killed the NHL when they first came out with their stupid, like, skin-tight jerseys. And, like, I think it was 2007 or something.
Wow.
They're trying to create this new kind of jersey that was, like, tight, form-fitting.
And
people
are
like, this is
right?
so stupid.
Yeah.
And then they made these awful, you know, these, like, the way they did is, like, templated designs. There was only a certain number of templates they came up with. So everyone had to, like, mold into these awful Reebok looks.
Oh, wow.
So luckily, I mean, they've gotten better over the years. But now, hopefully, Adidas can bring it back and make it look nice like they've done with their soccer jerseys. They always do a great job with those. My only concern is the whole three-stripe thing. Are they going to make every NHL team have, like, a three-stripe kind of look to them?
I would imagine they're going to keep that.
It's going to bother me.
That's
I don't like
thing.
That.
As long as they don't mess up your Penguins jerseys, you're okay, right?
You know, it's not really going to matter because it's going to be Reebok this year, and they're probably going to win the Cup. So they're going to be winning. They're going to be champions. So
Ooh.
It won't even matter.
Wow.
Phil Kessel, eat those hot dogs, baby.
All right. Next All right. we got?
This one I like. This is a pretty cool story. So this is from other side of the pond, The Telegraph. Cannabis discovered in tobacco pipes found in William Shakespeare's garden. Can you believe it? Forensic testing of 400-year-old pipes suggests the playwright might have smoked more than just tobacco.
Wow.
I mean, is anyone really truly surprised by this?
To be... Or not to be. That's how it was really meant to play.
Et tu, Brute.
And then we had, alas, poor Yorick. He never passed the Chiva. Yeah, there's something to it.
So, South African scientists have discovered that 400-year-old tobacco pipes excavated from the garden of William Shakespeare contained cannabis, suggesting the playwright might have written some of his famous works while high.
Creative juices, man.
This, yeah, you know what? Over time, I mean, they've found so much evidence over the years of cannabis being used medicinally for creativity. We're gonna look back in 50 years and laugh at the prohibition that we've had in the 19th or 20th century and early 21st century because it's absolutely ridiculous.
Interesting.
So it's good enough for Willie. It's good enough for. Citizens of today.
That's right.
Right?
So he's regarded as one of the best playwrights, right?
Yeah. And it even says Shakespeare's sonnets suggest he was familiar with the effects of both cocaine and cannabis.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug. In sonnet 76, he writes about invention in a noted weed, which Ooh. Could be interpreted to mean that Shakespeare was willing to use weed or cannabis while he was writing.
Hmm.
In the same sonnet, it appears that he would prefer not to be associated with compound strange, which can be interpreted, at least potentially, to mean strange drugs, possibly cocaine.
Nice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
All right. We got a nice, interesting, another... we're into this bear theme, I think.
There's a lot of bear stuff going on these days.
Bear stuff. So a man wearing a bear costume is harassing bears in Alaska. So... This is pretty nutty, but we looked, and I still want to see if somebody has a picture of him, but they didn't have one online. So authorities want to talk to a man who donned a fairly realistic bear costume, head and all, and wore it while harassing a bear and two sows trying to feed on pink salmon in Alaska, in an Alaska river. The incident happened Monday on the Chilkoot River near Haines. Said a fishing game assistant area manager Bialis Mark Suggy. Wasn't immediately known what the man was trying to accomplish. So who knows? He could have been, you know, doing the Will Shakespeare thing and just out there, like, hanging out in a bear costume. I think it would be poetic justice if he did get eaten. That would be kind of, you know.
One of my favorite things that you ever said to me was when we went up to a beer festival up in Vermont, and we were staying at our buddy's place, and he... our buddy was asleep in a hammock. So this is like the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh man, it would have been so awesome if I had a bear suit and went up to him. I was just like, you would have scared the shit out of him. Like,
I think he would have died.
He would have probably, his heart would have exploded.
If I had access to anything close, if he had a bearskin rug or something in the place, I would have put it on me and just woken him up. Because he was like, he had, I think he was on Facebook saying, oh, I just got the hammock. I'm going to lay down for a nice little nap. And I came in, the whole house is open. And I was like, this would be great. Scare the shit out of him.
And you got a house then. This house is yours.
Yeah, he's still in the hammock. Don't worry about it.
9/10 of the law, son.
Just let him sleep. He's still sleeping.
9/10.
9/10. So,
yeah, so be careful with your bear costumes. And if you do have one, please have good fun with it. And record yourself doing things that are stupid. We don't condone, you know, violence against bears or against people.
Why's he got to be a douchebag? Like, why's he got to harass the bears trying to eat salmon?
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
They got to eat, too.
I mean, he got within 5 to 10 feet of them.
Like, you kind of deserve to get eaten by that point.
Yeah, you kind of do.
Because they're not brown bear. I mean, they're not black bear. They're brown bear. You know, they're going to eat you.
Yeah, these aren't like little like ghetto fat Jersey bears that are kind of used to people. These are like serious, angry.
Out in the wilderness, I'm going to eat.
Salmon grabbing.
Yeah.
Nasty bears. Real bears. They're not Yogi. They're not these anthropomorphized silly bears. Or it's not Winnie the Pooh.
They're not looking for your virgin picnic basket. No, they're looking to eat you.
Fat virgin Winnie the Pooh.
That's right.
You know, none of that nonsense. This is a real goddamn bear who will kill you with his face.
Oh wow! All right,
this one's your favorite, I think.
All right, I'll take this one. So, a runaway kangaroo was seen in Upper Austria. So I decided, let me see what's going on in Austria.
Wait a minute, not Australia?
No, not Australia, but Austria. So a Viennese man was surprised to stumble upon a kangaroo during a break in Upper Austria's Mulvetal region, dispelling the famous slogan, which I guess is very popular there, and they have actual shirts. They show a shirt online. There are no kangaroos in Austria because, you know, it's commonly, you know, misinterpreted, you know, the pronunciation. So... At first, the guy thought he was being pranked by youth, and then he realized that it was a real kangaroo that just hopped away. So he kind of alerted the authorities, and there was a guy from Bavaria that had been in touch with authorities to say he had a pet kangaroo named Paul, who was missing since April. So I'm like, that's pretty wild stuff. Dude's hanging out in Austria.
Paul the kangaroo.
Paul the kangaroo running around.
Yeah.
So hope Paul gets home safely.
Godspeed, Paul.
That was pretty cute, though.
All right, and then there was a video that came out this week of an angry eagle punching a drone out of the sky. And it's a great, I mean, you know, the video is obviously from the drone's point of view, and you see this, like, you know, buzzing drone up in the air going over the forest, and then you just see this eagle coming out of nowhere, just getting closer and closer, and then just smacks the shit
eagle,
out of
man.
That drone. And the drone just kind of like, you know, gets all discombobulated and crashes to the ground.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really dynamite
that
video.
That eagle's badass. It was baller.
That's right.
It was not stopping.
No, he was not. He wanted nothing to do with that drone.
You know, I bet you he realized he wasn't like soft like a regular other bird. Otherwise, he would have eaten him.
Yeah. Probably tried to like dig his claws in him. He's like, oh, sorry, I just ganked the shit out of you and knocked you out of the sky. But, that's how I roll.
Probably circled around a little, said, yeah, that's right, you stay there.
He's like, I don't see any meaty center, any blood, nothing.
Oh, that's pretty cool, though.
I think drones must be really messing with all kinds of aerial wildlife, don't you think?
Well, I like how the eagles are fighting back.
Eagles are fighting back. It's like the resistance.
That's right. You want to fly a drone, we're going to take it down.
What about owls? I mean, I think owls probably really hate drones because they're very quiet and calm and intelligent.
Well, they're mainly out at night, so unless you're flying at night, which is probably not too much. Unless you're military.
Night droning.
You're not usually night droning.
Yeah.
So.
I feel like a buzzard. You know, like, well, like, wouldn't that just really annoy the shit out of you if these drones just kind of cruising around?
Annoy the shit out of you. It's like a big insect.
Yeah.
Think about it. Like, can't eat it. It's just buzzing around.
But is this going to force these birds to evolve?
It's going to force them to start attacking stuff. That's what
I'm thinking. Yeah.
I think you're messing up. You're messing with their mind, like you said.
Yeah.
Now the animal kingdom is going to act all crazy. Start eating shit.
I think it's gonna force them to evolve, to get stronger, and they're going to realize, when they start taking these out, that the humans were the ones who created and caused these, and it could be like the Alfred Hitchcock movie, The Birds.
Well, look what's happening now, modern days. You got hawks are coming into big cities.
Bird
lives matter. But hawks are coming into big cities. Coyotes now are a problem in big cities. There's coyotes in Manhattan. With their
Manhattan?
Tracking.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. You didn't see that like a few, like a month or two ago. They're
I know, like,
trying to track.
Los Angeles has a problem with
there's
coyotes.
There's coyotes everywhere, man.
I saw a dead one in Connecticut a couple weeks ago on the side of the road, yeah.
They were joking around on one of the news shows saying how, oh, if he moves into, you know, the coyote was seen like increasingly into like upper Manhattan. They're like, well, if he gets into a certain place, you know, that's a pretty expensive neighborhood. He might not be able to afford, you know. So it's kind of funny, but
think about someone's prized Pomeranian. He's going to be in trouble.
They were joking around, but they're like, these things are around, which is pretty interesting. Foxes, you see foxes all over now,
yeah.
Which you used to never see them like in this area. Things are changing, you know.
Yeah.
As we become more urbanized and take up more land, start putting up drones, they're getting pissed off.
Animals are fighting back.
And you know who else is fighting back? These dudes from China. Sky's the limit for a duo making shaped clouds, earning $1,000 a day in China.
A thousand pounds a day.
About $140. Convert that into Chinese, it's like, what, a million? No.
Well, yeah, £1,000 is what, like $1,400?
Yeah.
Which, how many yuan is that? I don't know.
No idea.
A lot.
But that's still £1,000 a day is a pretty good living.
I don't understand this.
So... we looked online. We looked at this, and they actually have pictures of it. So what these people do is they get this foam. They have a foam bubble making machine, and it makes. I guess there's a gas in the bubbles that creates this foam, and they make with this form a cloud in the shape of that, and then they float it up, and it floats away. It's pretty wild stuff, but it's like a foam cloud, and I guess they're. I don't understand how they're making so much money, but I guess people are saying, hey, make me a cloud. I'll give you £500. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're doing events or I don't know. But
so, yeah, it's cool. Like, the picture shows these stencils that they create, and I guess they, you know, they push that mixture they have through the stencils, and it goes up into the sky and gets bigger, I guess. Almost like, you know, if you put, like, a gummy bear in water, how it, like, expands over time.
Well, if you get, like, a weather balloon, and you put it up. When it goes up, it looks very deflated, and as it goes higher, it expands like full.
Yeah.
I saw that with the Google balloon thing. They were talking about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is pretty crazy. So they're making a ton of money doing this. So.
But the guy has a lock and key on his machine. He doesn't want anybody to know how he's making these bubbles.
His condensed water vapor.
It's the bubble. There's a secret to the bubbles.
Yeah.
That's like on Broadway, there's the gazillion bubble show.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody stole their bubbles, and they couldn't have the show for like a few months because they actually make, there's a process to make the bubbles that are special.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly it's an amazing, amazing show. They're making these giant bubbles and all this other like cool stuff in there, but they had their bubble stuff like stolen.
That's
maybe
so
this
funny.
Guy stole.
It's possible.
Possible. The big crime, ship it to China and make $1,000 a day with it.
Yeah, right. All right, I'm leaving this one to you because this one, you found this one.
This was pretty cool, though. So a park ranger drives 12 hours to remove a McDonald's sign from the desert. Now, this is in Australia, and I guess they had a desert race going. And these guys that were racing, they actually made a cool video. It was like a really neat like promo video. And they got a McDonald's sign, and they put it in the middle of the desert, like in the middle of nowhere. It had lights on it that would go on at night. And it pissed off the rangers, like, to no end. So this dude drove, like, 12 hours out to remove the fake McDonald's sign. And it said, you know, it was a whole McDonald's sign. It said, opening soon. So it was just the idea that it was in this desert regional preserve in Australia, the Simpson Desert Regional
Preserve. I mean,
preserve.
There's just, you watch the video, you know, it must be a drone or a helicopter or something taking the footage. And there's just shrub, like, dirt and just little bushes, you know, nothing really out there, and then all of a sudden there's this giant McDonald's sign.
It's awesome. But it was like one of these Baja road rally, I guess, that these guys are cruising through. And
what a couple of dicks. I love it.
Oh, talk about just pissing people off.
I just picture the guy being like you know, the ranger getting all pissed off. He's kind of like the ranger in Jurassic Park who gets eaten by the raptors.
Yeah, right.
Clever girl.
Well, they have comments in there that said it lights up at night, made for a striking eyesore in the flatland. So I guess if you're like out in the flatland looking out at night, you see the freaking McDonald's sign. So they got so fed up, they were like, we got to get rid of it.
I wonder if McDonald's paid those guys to do it.
I don't know, they should, though.
Guerrilla advertising.
Yeah, they should, though. They should pay him something.
Yeah. Good move, fellas.
Like the Chipotle guys, are they still at it? Let's look at the Chipotle guys.
What's the count? Is it how many days in a row has the has this guy eaten Chipotle? It's what, 160 now?
Has to be close to 160.
Oh, good for him. And he's still keeping those abs. That's the most amazing thing about it.
Abs of Chipotle.
Abs of Chipotle. All right, well, I guess that about wraps it up for this week's podcast, eh?
That does.
All right, cool. So, yeah, guys, please go over to SkiBumPodcast.com. We will have links to all these wonderful stories, and you can check it out there and hit us up then on Facebook and Twitter and email us. And if you can, please subscribe on iTunes so you always get the latest podcast, and rate us, please. Hopefully you want to give us a 4 or 5 stars because we want you to, and that would make us really happy, and that would give us some more love and some more sponsors, and then we can do more cool stories. Maybe even travel the globe, and maybe we'll even broadcast in your neck of the woods. Who wouldn't want that? So, yes, please hit us up, and thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
And like Will Shakespeare said, stay high, stay gluten.
Cheerio.